Welcome to a Memorial Day weekend edition of The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you with us on this Friday, May 24th. Coming up on The Week in Review, we will talk about President Obama yesterday talking about the future of the war on terror, the use of drones, and closing Guantanamo. And we will also talk about Governor Walker testing the presidential waters in Iowa, plus the very many state budget developments going on. There were advancement on food stamp legislation, double dipping, public employee smoking, and much more. Plus, whatever issues you want to talk about, bring up a topic if you'd like. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us on Twitter at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. Happy to have with us today Steve Prestigar, journalist and blogger at steveprestigar.com. Hello, Steve.
Good morning.
And Christine Bremer-Moogley is with us, attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau and one of Wisconsin's presidential electors. She joins us from her vacation cottage in Minocqua. Good morning.
Good morning, Joey. Actually, I'm in my office in Minocqua, but close to my cottage, so it's nice to be up here.
Well, you should be. I guess you're kind of working, so thank you.
Yeah, I'll be working all day as soon as we're done.
But you are planning on enjoying yourself in the Northwoods, I take it, this weekend.
Well, yeah, I think this weekend we can actually put our pier in. Last time we were up here, our lake was covered in ice.
Yeah, that's right.
So now I think we can do it. So we're excited. I'm looking at open water on Lake Minocqua right now, and it's beautiful.
Excellent. Well, I hope to visit there sometime this summer. Steve, are you going to any plans for the unofficial kickoff to the summer vacation season?
Well, typically we go to the Glen Haven Fire Department fish fry, which is more than 50 years old, so I think we're going to do that. I'm kind of sitting here, though, a little bit bummed because for about the 33rd year in a row now, I have not been invited to announce the Wisconsin Public Television Auction Firehouse Quickie Board. You know, I volunteered for the thing back in, like, the late 1970s. I've announced sports for 25 years now, so I think I'd be really good at the Firehouse Quickie, but do they invite me? No, they want somebody who's actually got a name. So, you know, I'm going to have to get over that this weekend.
Yeah, it's okay. I'll put in a good word for you, Steve. How's that? Anyway, let's talk about just to start. Governor Walker was in Iowa yesterday. Why was he in Iowa yesterday, Steve?
Because he had a real urge for pork chops, maybe. The obvious reason that's obviously not the case. He obviously is kind of toying around with the idea of running for president in 2016. I think he shouldn't. I think that neither he nor Paul Ryan, nor to be honest about it, anybody who is from this state is ever going to get elected president. But if he wants to do it, if he wants to, you know, he can certainly. Even if he doesn't decide to run for president, he can certainly increase his public profile. He can certainly, you know, raise money for the GOP in other states. But it's pretty obvious. You don't go to Iowa. I mean, you know, pork's really good, but you don't go to Iowa unless you're interested in running for president in a few years. So obviously he's trying to figure out if he's got support to do that.
Yeah, well, Christine, do you think he stands a chance?
Well, no, I really don't. I agree. I really don't think he stands a chance. I think it's funny that we're talking about him going to Iowa and looking for pork. I think that what he was doing was talking to 600 Republicans there, telling them that he was from Iowa and grew up in Iowa, which was sort of a Michelle Bachmann story revisited, and had a private. They had a fundraiser for him there. I mean, he's going across the country raising money. He was in New York. He was in Connecticut. I mean, he was in New York at the 21 Club, having this huge fundraiser in Manhattan, where, as I understand it, the menu there has items on it that are more than $190 per item, which is the amount of money that we're going to be cutting out of the poor's food share under his proposal in a month. So I think it's interesting what our governor is doing. And if he wants to travel around and ignore the state when we're having these huge problems and raise money for himself, I guess he's just showing the people where he really is.
Now, we have a clip from his speech in Iowa yesterday, and he was urging Republicans to be courageous, that that they should talk about things like entitlement reform. And he did bring up this food share topic in Iowa, saying that he has proposed that able-bodied adults who are on food stamps, who do not have dependents, should be working part-time at least, or they should be in 20 hours a week of job training. And here's a clip from that portion of the speech.
You might imagine what they said in Madison. Oh, the governor hates poor people. He's making it harder to get government assistance. I pushed back right away and said, I'm not making it harder to get government assistance. I love the people in my state so much, I'm making it easier to get a job.
So, Christine?
Well, I just think it's outrageous. I heard Representative Corey Mason comment on this. He's a member of the Joint Finance Committee, as you know, and he was commenting on this matter coming into the budget bill and saying that, you know, it was one of the most mean-spirited things he'd seen in public office, and that he came into office really hoping to help those that are the least among us. And this bill goes directly in the face of that. You know, this bill tries to mimic what President Clinton did in 1996 with regard to requiring, you know, people to work if they are going to receive some benefits or to try at least try to work. But in that bill, there is an out for states where the unemployment rate is very high. And so most states have gotten waivers from the requirement of work to receive these benefits because the food share program is a federal program. But Walker wants to go around that and get an exception, even though in our state we are in April, as we all know from the numbers, you know, we were the last in the nation in terms of job creation and lost 22,000 jobs. So we're saying to people, we know you can't get a job. You might have lost your job. And now it's so hard in Wisconsin to get a job, but we're going to take away your food. And I just don't think that this policy reflects our values as a state. And it's really unfortunate that Scott Walker wants to use this to go around the country and talk about courage. I don't think there's anything courageous about taking food from people that don't have work.
Steve?
Well, curiously, I noticed that Wisconsin's unemployment rate is still lower than the national rate. So that's one point. The Democrats, Corey Mason, for instance, who voted against this, might want to talk to their own constituents, those people who are not on food stamps, but who are paying for them through their taxes. Reform of welfare is and continues to be extremely popular among the people who are paying for it, that is to say voters. And, you know, the fact is, if you take government aid, you have to accept whatever the strings attached are. There is a weekly job search requirement, for instance, when you get unemployment. That's been the case for years. And either if you don't like that requirement, you don't get unemployment. In the state of, I believe it's Florida, they're now requiring drug testing for welfare recipients. And that is, you know, if that proposal ever comes to Wisconsin, that's going to sail through because that is extraordinarily popular. People I talk to when the subject comes up, do not like the idea of people getting government benefits and doing nothing to try to pay for them, or, you know, even in a non-financial sense. So, you know, this is simply a case of this is popular with voters, regardless of what Corey Mason seems to think.
Well, I think if you look at Corey
Mason's
history,
also why Scott Walker brings that up when he goes across the country.
Christine?
Well, in Corey Mason's district, the unemployment is certainly not 7%. And if you look at the rates and look at the chart across the state, in northern half of the state, unemployment rates are in excess of 10% in many of the counties. And I think that what you have to look at is that this program that Scott Walker wants to impose upon the people without jobs in Wisconsin is going to cost our state money, millions of dollars. I believe it's $16 million in addition because we're turning down this federal aid. So I think that if taxpayers are really looking at this, they're going to say, wait a minute, this is mean-spirited, number one. And it's also reflecting, you know, putting kind of a stigma on those people that can't have jobs or don't have jobs when they are trying to find jobs. I mean, I talk to people every day in my law practice, people that have lost jobs across central Wisconsin, and they are trying their best to get jobs and to take away their food when many of them, you know, are really, really about to go move into their cars because they have nowhere to go. Is really, really unbelievable. What we should be doing is trying to help these people. And Scott Walker's record of creating jobs is abysmal. And so now instead of saying the jobless rate is because of his failed policies, he's saying that we're having difficulty in Wisconsin because of the jobless. So he's shifting the blame. And I just think that's wrong. And I think most people think it's wrong, and it doesn't reflect the Wisconsin that I know.
Let me bring up another issue. The Joint Finance Committee yesterday blocked Governor Walker's plan to exempt rent-to-own businesses from Wisconsin's consumer protection laws. So something that that the governor proposed in the budget is not going to happen, at least not now. A handful of Republicans, including Senate President Mike Ellis, have been pushing the committee to remove the proposal from the budget. This would not have required these businesses, these rent-to-own businesses, to disclose their interest rates, which critics say are exorbitant. So, Steve, any problems with that?
No, not particularly. I mean, there's a couple of things. First, obviously, this is yet another example of policy items that shouldn't be in the state budget, and of course, that is something that both parties and both parties' governors have been guilty of for literally decades. And I don't know when that's going to stop, but it really does need to. But so I'm fine with it not being in there. I do question why it is the government is supposed to prevent people from making bad financial decisions out of their own free will. I mean, anybody who knows basic math ought to be able to figure out that rent-to-own products are something you should avoid like the plague. There is literally no good reason I have ever heard of to get something from a rent-to-own business. You're going to, you know, you're going to end up paying a grotesque amount of money for it. And if you, for something that you're not even going to own at the end of it, I don't understand why it is the government is supposed to step in and make people and prevent people from, again, out of their own free will, because nobody holds a gun to their head to go into these places, to be making bad financial decisions. Mm-hmm. But I'm fine with it not being in the budget.
Christine, your response to what Steve had to say and your reaction to being pulled or blocked from the Joint Finance Committee.
Well, I agree with Steve that this shouldn't have been in the budget. It absolutely is something that looks like payback to Walker's support from the rent-to-own industry in his election and in the recall. So it's a political payback on the backs of the financially illiterate. You know, I think, you know, Steve, when you say anybody that can read should know better, well, there's many people that can't read and they don't know better and they aren't in a position of acting in free will. You know, if you are a single mom and your refrigerator breaks and you've got a bunch of hungry kids and you have no possible way of getting another refrigerator and you find out, well, I can get one from rent to own, and you sign a contract you can't read and can't possibly understand that's full of blank spaces and does not even tell you under the current proposal, would not even tell you what the interest rate was, I think that is preying on people. And government, in my opinion, does have a role to protect people from things like this. And I really salute Senator Ellis, who said, you know, this is not the role of government to allow companies like this to prey on the poor and prey on those who are illiterate with regard to financial issues. And it is government's job to provide consumer protections and to prevent companies from doing this. So I guess, Steve, you and I have a big disagreement philosophically about the role of government, but I think this is a classic case of government doing what it should do to protect people. And it's shameful that our governor, who claims to love the people of Wisconsin so much, that he's going to allow people that give him big campaign contributions to take advantage of them. I think it's shameful. So I salute the Joint Finance Committee, and I'm so glad it's out of the budget.
Christine Bremer-Moogley is an attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau. And Steve Prestigard is a journalist and blogger at steveprestigard.com. Our two guests today for this edition of the Week in Review. We have many other state budget issues to cover after the break. We'll talk about the UW system. them funding. Coming up, we'll also talk about a move to prevent so-called double dipping. We'll also talk about a proposed hike in insurance rates for public employees who smoke, and many other issues. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network. Tonight on Here and Now on Wisconsin Public Television, Frederica Freiberg talks about the Joint Finance Committee's recommendation for funding of the UW system. That's Here and Now tonight at 7:30 on Wisconsin Public Television. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to The Week in Review. We have with us two guests from different political viewpoints talking about the top political news stories of the week, and Christine Bremer-Moogley and Steve Prestigard are with us. The UW system funding is one of the issues that we need to cover. A legislative committee has voted to slash the UW system's budget. Some say this is venting its anger after learning the system raised tuition for six straight years, even though it's currently sitting on a surplus of $650 million. The bill eliminates a proposed spending increase of $181 million for the UW system in the upcoming budget, and it also freezes tuition for 2 years. So, Steve Prestigard, was this the right move?
Well, it's going to be a tremendously popular move to freeze tuition for 2 years. That's absolutely true. There is absolutely a role for surpluses when you have things that you're planning on spending money on in future years. Of course, if you're going to do that, you really need to communicate that to people, and that is quite obviously what the UW system failed to do when they were accumulating these surpluses. That was apparently all right with the Doyle administration. That is apparently not all right with the Walker administration. And that's why all of this got started in the first place. If the UW system had said publicly, we have this building plan in mind, we have this program plan in mind, or whatever, you would not have gotten the same kind of screaming going on as a result when you find out, the tuition has gone up like it did, and they're accumulating nine-digit surpluses. So it is basically the UW system's fault. Everything that the legislature has done to the UW system since this came out could have been prevented if the UW system had actually, if somebody in the UW system had engaged in PR 101 and said, long ago, we have plans. These are the things we're going to be doing with these surplus funds. Didn't apparently occur to anybody until far too late.
One thing I missed was, besides cutting the $181 million increase and freezing tuition for 2 years, it gave the Joint Finance Committee gave the UW system a $2.5 million cut. Christine?
I think Steve is right, on the UW's problem with not communicating what they were doing financially, because I think that everyone would agree that you must have monies in reserve if you're in government. I mean, these monies were spread across this huge UW system in various departments and in various branches of the university, and all of the monies were set aside for certain purposes. It wasn't like they were just stashing money away. It was money that was earmarked to do certain things within various departments. And the fact that it was there is absolutely good public planning. So the problem with it is that they just didn't let the legislature know, and then they decided to make it a big political problem for the UW, because there are those who really don't like the UW that much and see it as filled with their political enemies, I guess. But the point is that Steve is right. It should have been something that was on the table and everyone knew it. Transparency is always right. And there's nothing wrong with having the money set aside in reserve. I think, as Steve said, it certainly helps the students to freeze tuition. I've got a kid at the UW right now, and so those tuition hikes are hurtful to everyone. And it'll be very popular to freeze tuition. I just don't want our flagship university, the one that we stand so proud of and has made our state such a great state, to be harmed. And I'm hopeful that the legislature will not cut any more from it, because this is about all they can handle.
Let's go to a caller, Jamie in Waupun. Hi, Jamie.
Hello. I am a UW student, and you're talking about political enemies. It seems as though the Joint Finance Committee took on a political enemy in the United Council, you know, these students, because they changed the way that they're funded. Their funding model is going to be different now. Instead of being automatically having a $3 fee taken out of their tuition automatically, now they have to sign up to pay the $3. And the student group, United Council, is a great organization that I was actually a member of. But my point, my question is, do you know of this thing that I'm talking about, and what do you think the reason is?
And Jamie, very briefly, why does this matter?
Because the group is a lobbying group that lobbies for keeping tuition low. They lobby for every time that there's a tuition raise that financial aid goes in. So they lobby for students' rights, and this is just an attack on a lobbying group.
And doing this change in the way the council is funded is going to result in a lot less funding, Jamie? Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, a huge amount, probably 80% less.
Yeah, all right. So what do you think of that, Steve?
Well, I graduated from UW 25 years ago last week. I remember when paying tuition for 5 years at UW, these fees, SUFAC, I think was the acronym, and I remember seeing my fee dollars being used by things that I never approved of, for political uses, for like partisan political uses, or, you know, causes I didn't support. And so I think it's, you know, if the United Council is really that effective for UW students, then the United Council fee ought to be able to stand on its own. People should be able to choose it instead of having yet another one of these fees that you don't have a choice to pay it, and you don't have a choice as to how it gets used. And if you remember, a couple of years ago, the subject of political fees, you know, of things like union fees being taken from you without your permission and being used for things that you don't approve of, seem to be a pretty big deal in this state. So if that's just an extension of this, well, I approve it. I support it as a taxpayer.
Christine?
Well, I think that it's, I thank the caller for letting us know about this. You know, I think that if there are fees being taken without, you know, without your support in the UW system, then that's something that should be looked at. I know that there are many students that don't support having athletic fees being taken when they don't participate in athletics in any way. I think that if that's going to be the case, if we're going to look at the fees and say it's on a per choice, then let's look at all the fees, but not earmark some and not others. You know, it does look like targeting of enemies. It does look like saying we don't want these students to be such a problem. We remember the students were the ones that were in the Capitol during the protests against Act 10. Those are the students were some of the loudest and the ones that brought it to our attention as a nation immediately. So this could be targeting political enemies. And I agree that if there are fees that are going to be taken out, then let people agree to them. But do it across the board and don't say you have to pay your athletic fees when you aren't participating in athletics, but you don't have to pay this one. So I think it's something that we should look at closely. And I think it's important that there be some discussion on this. And I think it's really good that you're bringing this forward and letting everybody know about it.
Thank you, Jamie, for the call. We'll go through a few more state issues that went through Joint Finance this week, and then we have many other national issues to cover as well. So we'll try to do the next couple quickly. The Joint Finance Committee took aim at reducing what's called double dipping. It's recommending that public employees have to wait 75 days between retiring from their jobs and then coming back. It also limits the amount of time that they could work and still draw retirement benefits to about 1,400 hours a year. So that averages out to about 7 hours a day for a teacher working a 180-day school year. Double dipping. Christine, was there anything wrong with that practice? That's a public employee who retires, starts collecting a pension, and then goes back to work for the state agency.
Well, you know, I think there's a lot wrong with it. You know, when you talk about double dipping, it has a negative connotation. So it's like you're doing two things and doing justice to neither one of them, right? So what are we talking about here? It seems once again that teachers are being targeted. As a 9-year alumni of a member of a SWASA school board and its president, I can tell you that when teachers retired and came back to help us, that was a big benefit to the school district, and it still is. And so what they're saying here is that that's not good. You know, when teachers come back, they help fill in vacancies. We maintain the level of expertise in our school district. It helps bring the younger teachers along. And if they come back and help teach or train the younger teachers, that's a huge benefit. So why are we targeting teachers? In this bill, for teachers, it's a different level than for others. So if you work 1,392 hours under this bill, you cannot get any pension benefits. But if you're a teacher and you work 1,200 hours, you get no pension benefits. And if you're a teacher, you know, it's just not fair. If you're a teacher, rather, if you work 880 hours, you get no benefits. And for others, it's 1,200. So it's singling out teachers so they have to work less. And the problem with this is we're talking about the pension benefit as if it's something we're giving to them. A pension benefit is deferred compensation. It's money that they earned and put away for their retirement. So they're not double dipping. It's their money. And we're claiming that they're taking something mm-hmm. that is not theirs, which is wrong. And then secondly, we're giving away the benefit of all this expertise. So I think it's a ridiculous policy, really badly formed and not really thought through.
Steve?
Just to harm teachers.
Well, obviously, I'm not as well versed on this as Christine's essay demonstrated, but I'll say just two things. From a taxpayer perspective, a taxpayer would look at this and say, "They're retiring; they're coming back. Why are they retiring in the first place?" And secondly, taxpayers, I think, are not real pleased at yet another example of government employees getting much better benefits, which, by the way, were paid for by taxpayers than the person who works in the private sector. And that pretty much would be the, if you talk to a person on the street who's not necessarily familiar with this, that would be probably their reaction to that issue.
Well, that's just the point. They're not familiar with it. They don't understand the fact that these public employees, when they became public employees, they did it knowing that they were going to get certain benefits, and then they were just taken from them. And what we're talking about isn't giving them something more. It's talking about their retirement benefit. It's their deferred compensation. They earned it. So it's not giving them anything extra.
Most of that deferred compensation came from taxpayers. You know, remember, it's only been relatively recently that in a lot of school districts, 100% of the deferred compensation came from the school district, not from the individual. That was one of the things that Act 10 changed. So, you know, again,
that doesn't make any sense. Every cent that a teacher makes comes from the taxpayers. They're public employees, but they're earning their money. Are you saying the people that work for the government don't earn what they make? It's ridiculous.
Yeah,
they are earning their wages.
Let me move on to another issue. If you are a state worker who smokes, you will have to pay an extra $50 a month for health insurance under the proposal that passed in the Joint Finance Committee this week. It voted 13-3 to impose this additional fee. Governor Walker says the fee is needed because health care costs for tobacco users are about 35% higher than for those who don't. So, Steve, what do you think of this additional fee for health insurance, $50 a month for...
Given the fact that people who have private sector insurance policies have had to pay something like this for years, I think it's absolutely overdue. I do find interesting, and I'd like to hear an explanation about this, that, you know, supposedly the American Cancer Society and the American Lung Association actually oppose these because they say they're not effective in reducing tobacco use. And I'm kind of curious as to why that is. You have increased cigarette taxes for years with exactly the idea that making cigarettes more expensive will make them, you know, people will smoke less. But you do the same thing with health insurance, and that doesn't work. And I'm curious as to why that is. But as you know, again, because people in the private sector have had to pay this for years, I'm absolutely in support of it.
Christine?
Well, I'm in the private sector, and when I saw this come out, I checked I have a number of employees, and a number of them smoke. And so I wanted to see if it was costing me more money as their employer, because I buy their health insurance and they contribute a portion of it, if it was costing us more. And the fact was, it wasn't costing us anything more. That was the same rate for smokers or non-smokers. And so then I looked a little deeper into this and found that if we look at the state workers in Wisconsin, it's, 9.6% are smokers. And in this bill, it's going to go not only to the people that currently work, but also to the retirees, many of whom are veterans, many of whom are people that have smoked, you know, when they were younger and became addicted, unfortunately, to tobacco or to nicotine. So we've got this smoking fee, which is more or less a penalty. It's another one of these provisions in Walker's bag of tricks, where he just is trying to penalize people instead of helping them. If he really cares about the people of Wisconsin that are smokers, why not help them with a smoking cessation program? This thing is going to be impossible to implement. First of all, it talks about tobacco use. Is that chewing tobacco too? I mean, and then how are you going to know if workers are actually smoking or not? You're going to give them a lie detector test? And if they go in and lie about it under this bill, they're going to lose their health insurance. Or at least they give them the opportunity to take their health insurance away, which is something under Obamacare is prohibited. So these laws that they're implementing are ridiculous. They're not good public policy. I mean, everyone would like their people to quit smoking. I talk to the women in my office that smoke all the time. If they're listening, they're probably laughing, and tell them to stop it. And I try to help them. But to do this and say $50 a month when you're going to hurt these people and not stop smoking and not increase worker health and just make something put in place that is unenforceable is ridiculous. So why doesn't he do something to help people rather than hurt them?
We'll take one quick call from Ned in Mosinee. Hi, Ned.
Hi, I'd like to bring up something that's going to be a very hot issue next week in the state legislature. And that's the single vendor for the SIS, Student Information System. Currently, Mary Lazik, Senator, is a Republican who's brought up a very good multi-vendor implement, and this is called the budget motion to the current budget. It's not a bill. It's a budget motion. And this is really important because the way it is now, the single vendor results in a loss of free market system, much greater cost to taxpayers, to the local districts and to the counties, loss of local control, and loss of competition among vendors. And it's just a very unfunded mandate that's unfair.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, Ned, because this is the week in review, and this is next week. I'm not going to go into a big, long explanation there. I think this is the situation where the Stevens Point Company is no longer the vendor of these student information systems. Christine, do you have anything on this?
Yeah, I thank Ned for bringing that up, and I think it will be important next week, but it's important now. I think that there's no reason that a company in Wisconsin creating jobs in Wisconsin who has a very fine product that is in use in numbers of schools in central Wisconsin and all over the state has to be thrown out because the Department of Public Instruction has to follow the mandate for a single vendor. I think it's wrong, and I credit her, for the senator, for bringing this bill forward.
Yeah, and Steve, a quick react to this bill?
So you're saying this is the week in review, not the week in preview. Okay, I get it. This is sort of a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation, because on the one hand, if the company in Stevens Point, Skyward, right, or if their bid is higher, then people get criticized because the state is spending more money. But the fact that it's an in-state company, they get criticized because they're not choosing an in-state company. But if the caller's description of this bill is accurate, seems to me that school districts maybe should be able to decide on their own who they choose for their computer vending system.
Thanks, Ned, for the call. State Democrats this week calling on Governor Walker's plan to expand voucher schools to be scrapped. A group of lawmakers said this week that the money saved on getting the voucher plan out of the budget, combined with the new budget revenue projections over the next 2 years, would be enough to give local school districts a 275% increase in their revenue limits. So State Democrats calling for an end to the talk of expanding voucher schools. Christine, your thoughts on this?
Well, when we think about adding $275 per student when Walker cut $500 per student, it seems like a little bit, not enough. To me, anyway, I think it should be bringing us back to the full amount that was cut. But, you know, these vouchers, as I told you, I was, as a former school board president, we had vouchers, we had these charter schools, and we had this voucher issue come before us. And the biggest problem with this voucher thing that's coming forward is the loss of local control, in my opinion. You know, it's taking it away from the local school boards to approve these schools. And, you know, the bill as it's expanding now would even put the voucher program in Madison. I mean, it would put it in any school district with more than two failing schools, failing by these arbitrary standards that are being set up by the Walker administration. So it's obviously a big push to expand vouchers. From a group, you know, that the American Federation of Schools, that is this 504c3 that wants, that gave Walker huge, huge amounts of money in the recall. And it's another payback. And it's at the expense of our children. So vouchers, in my opinion, should not be expanded. Local control from school boards to approve voucher schools should not be taken away. I mean, they shouldn't be allowed to have students with special needs to go into private charter schools without the protection of the federal government standards, the IDEA Act and others. So there's so many problems with this that people aren't aware of and people really need to study, but it's complicated. So I credit the Democrats for saying, let's put extra money back into the schools. But in my opinion, it's not enough, and this voucher program really needs to go away.
Steve.
Well, I think the Republicans, if the Republicans can be criticized here, I think they ought to be criticized for failing to communicate to people why the voucher system is a better system for students in the biggest and most in school districts with the biggest problems, basically, in this state. However, voucher opponents haven't answered several questions either. And, you know, the first is why people who send their kids to private schools ought to be second-class citizens, where they have to pay private school tuition and property taxes, no tax break at all. Secondly, they haven't talked about what they would be willing to cut from the state budget, maybe in non-educational areas, in order to spend $275 a student more on schools. And the third thing they haven't discussed is what should be done about failing schools in Milwaukee. Arguably, nearly the entire school district, MPS, is a failure, but you know, I went to school in Madison. I graduated 30 years ago from Madison schools. They're not nearly as good as they used to be when I was in school. Obviously, the problems of big city school districts are going to places like the school districts that are proposed in the voucher plan. And I still haven't heard a better explanation or a better rationale from opponents of vouchers as to what you should do about these schools that have major problems other than give them more money. And I think that give them more money thing is getting really old among people who are in the fifth highest tax state in the country in terms of state and local taxes.
Let me jump in because we need to move on to some other issues, and we also need to do our Week in Review quiz. I'm Joy Cardine with Steve Prestigard, journalist, blogger at steveprestigard.com, and Christine Bremer-Moogley, an attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau and one of Wisconsin's presidential electors. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. Time now for our Week in Review quiz. Here's the question. A Wisconsin teenager is the winner of a pretty cool national contest. She designed the artwork, the Google Doodle, that you may have seen yesterday on Google's homepage. It featured a girl with an American flag in hand moving toward a soldier and giving him a hug. We want to know, which Wisconsin city is she from? Where is the Google Doodle winner from? What Wisconsin city? 1-800-642-1234 is our number. If you'd like to call in your guess, we'll give you 5 minutes. 5 minutes is all to call in your guess. You could also email us, talk@wpr.org. We will announce the answer and the winner at the end of the program, and the randomly selected winner will be able to choose from a number of books that we have featured on the program recently. Well, so Let's talk about President Obama yesterday. He talked about the future of the war on terror. He talked about the use of drones, and he talked about Guantanamo. And he was also heckled by an activist. Let's take a listen to the conclusion of his speech.
Victory will be measured in parents taking their kids to school, immigrants coming to our shores, fans taking in a ball game, a veteran starting a business, a bustling city street, a citizen shouting her concerns at a president.
So, Christine, what did you think was most significant about what the president had to say yesterday?
Well, I thought the way he handled that heckler was amazing, first of all. I mean, I was thinking, oh my goodness, if this had been Bush, he would have been tackled. But I thought his speech was very thoughtful, and you know, I think he was. It seemed like he was almost ruminating when he was talking about it. I believe that he's gone too slow on closing Guantanamo, and I understand that there are problems, and the Congress hasn't allowed us to move these people into the United States, even though there's no evidence that that would be a harm to our country. So I hope that the closing of Guantanamo is much hastened. These men that are on fasting and being forced fed are it's just a disaster for us, and it's an embarrassment. So I hope that that happens. I think that giving more information to Congress about drones and using drones in a very limited way, as he's described, is a good thing. Obviously, they're going to still use them targeted in combat zones, but that's much better than just putting drones over unknown groups of men and killing civilians. So I think that it's about time he came forward and let us know what he's thinking, and I'm glad he did. And I hope that this hastens some action on Guantanamo.
And he was in his speech saying that he is the changing nature of the threats facing the nation are now not some grandiose plot of Al-Qaeda, but smaller networks and homegrown extremists. Steve Prestigard, do you think the president is right with a more targeted fight on terror?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious that the, you know, there's the targets are going to change. The people who have some sort of offense or take some sort of offense at this country for whatever reason, that's going to change. I think, you know, I don't pay attention to political speeches. I pay attention to political acts. So it's really about what the Obama administration is doing, not what Obama says in a speech. I think that, you know, I find it interesting that the drone policy of the Obama administration, that a lot of Democrats have been very quiet about it. Certainly, George W. Bush would have just been ripped to shreds from coast to coast if this had been his policy. The dirty little secret about the Obama administration is that in foreign policy, there's not a whole lot that's been different between the Bush administration and the Obama administration. One example of that, candidate Obama said he was going to close Guantanamo. Here it is 5 years later, and Guantanamo isn't closed. And maybe he figured out that it's not necessarily, you know, number one, it's not really a priority among voters. And number two, maybe there's a good reason to keep them out of this, you know, out of this country. So it's interesting to me that, you know, the same things that Bush got criticized for, people are, you know, people on Obama's side are a little silent about all of that.
Yeah, let me move on to another issue. The story of the IRS targeting conservative groups that applied for tax-free status continues to play out. Lois Lerner, the IRS manager who oversaw the agents that scrutinized Tea Party groups, is being replaced. This came after a day she gave a brief opening statement to Congress saying she did nothing wrong and then pleaded the Fifth. Meanwhile, Republican Congressman Sean Duffy from Wisconsin, your representative, Christine, grilled Treasury Secretary Jack Lew about what he knew about IRS activity. Let's take a listen to that.
When did you know that this trolling was going on?
You're not going to like my answer because I learned about it when I learned about it.
When was that?
I did not know there was an investigation.
I didn't ask you about an investigation.
Well, I didn't know.
I'm not asking about an investigation.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman,
you can ask me the question.
The time belongs to the gentleman of Wisconsin.
Mr. Chairman, I would ask that the witness not be badgered.
I would ask that the witness answer the question.
Congressman, I'm answering your question.
No, you're not. You keep saying you're dodging me.
Well, what did you think of that, Christine?
Not much. Mm-hmm. I have to say, you know, as a trial lawyer, that certainly doesn't show great skill in cross-examination there, Sean Duffy. But on the other hand, I think that the important thing that's being lost in this whole investigation of the IRS, et cetera, in my opinion, is what were they up to in the first place? And what they were up to was investigating the 501c4s, which are claiming to be social welfare agencies and claiming social welfare status when they are primarily conducting activity that is political. And so when Senator Levin, Carl Levin, and the Subcommittee on Investigations a year ago asked for the IRS to look into this, he asked them to look into it on both sides of the aisle, both on the liberal side and the conservative side, because the groups on both sides were doing it. And this is all the progeny of Citizens United. And since that time, you know, there has been all this activity from individuals who want to conceal political contributions, and they give it to these 501c4s, and then they give a lot of money to candidates, such as the people that support vouchers in our state. You know, $2.4 million came in through one of these corporations into political campaigns in the state of Wisconsin. And that was the group that supports the American Federation for Children that supports, you know, mm-hmm. voucher programs. So this is absolutely political activity. So don't lose sight of the fact that there was a reason for this investigation on both sides. I'm sure there are groups that are 501c4s on the liberal side also that are using it solely for the purpose of concealing donations, and they are nothing to do with social welfare organizations. So I hope that this political witch hunt that is going on really can get to the meat of it, which is, what are we going to do about this campaign finance issue? Because that's really, truly what it's about.
Stephen, I'm sorry, we just have about a minute for your thoughts on the IRS investigation.
Well, a way to defend the most hated and most feared government organization in the United States. You know, there's actually two possible scenarios here, neither of which Christine really addressed. Either, and I'm not sure which of these is worse, really, either the Obama administration did pull a Richard Nixon trick and ordered IRS groups to harass conservative groups. And if that's the case, everybody responsible should be fired, right up to the Treasury Secretary. And maybe the I word comes out as far as, you know, Obama goes. But the other option is maybe the White House really did not know about what was going on. And what that demonstrates is that the IRS is uncontrollable and answers to no one. And that, you know, that might very well be the worst option of all this. This ought to appall everybody, because if the Obama administration can do this to conservatives and conservative groups, then a future Republican presidential administration can do the exact same thing, or maybe even worse, to liberals and liberal groups.
Let me hold you there. We need to congratulate Kathy in Catawba. She is the winner of our Week in Review quiz. From which Wisconsin city is the girl who designed the Google Doodle? Well, she's from Sparta. Sabrina Brady is a senior at Sparta High School. She says she created the art called Coming Home in honor of the day her dad returned from serving in Iraq. For winning the Doodle for Google contest, Sabrina will get a $30,000 college scholarship and more. So way to go, Sabrina. Congratulations to her. And I think we're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time. As usual, it goes too quickly. Christine Bremer-Moogley and Steve Prestigard, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Joy. Thanks, Steve.
Have a good
Yep. Happy Memorial Day weekend. Have a very thoughtful Memorial Day. Christine Bremer-Moogley is an attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau, and Steve Prestigard is a journalist and blogger at steveprestigard.com. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing this program. Thanks to Christy Taylor for on-air production. Thank you for listening. I hope you join us Monday. We'll be here on Memorial Day. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.